listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies.
This is AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show.
It's AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, AfterBuzzers. Welcome to Netflix original series House of Cards Season 2, Episode 7, entitled Chapter 20. I'm your host, Thaddeus Massey, and joining me today is...
Hey everyone, I'm Sophia Stanley.
Hey guys, it's Emma Kay.
And last episode, we left off with lobbyist turned Tusk pawn, whatever he is.
He's still a lobbyist, he just has a different big client.
You're right, he has a different big client. We left off with him hooking up with the new majority whip, Jackie Sharp. We said we're going to start off with this because I think we kind of thought it might happen. And then when it did happen, we were kind of like, oh, okay, Remy's getting some. And Remy's not a base, handsome, articulate young man, you know? Let's hook Remy up with somebody. Let's have him get some somewhere.
But I think he's more invested in it than her. I think it was her plan all along to try to have an ally with Tusk because... Frank has assigned her to find out and to work with Remy and just to be on top of everything.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I just had a major revelation based on something Sophia said last episode. You know when two people kind of envy each other and they kind of, like, clash because they really like each other? Okay. Well, Jackie represents Frank and Remy represents Tusk, and now they're making love. So is that, like, or making love, or is that... kind of really that Tusk and Frank really like each other?
No, you can't say that because Remy used to work for Frank. So
yeah,
in
but
a
that
way,
was in the past. It almost seems like he didn't like Frank while he was working for him. It was just like a stepping stone in his career.
But so, a lot of what he learned is from Frank. So,
But I agree with you. But then he figuratively and literally chose technically a different path.
Exactly.
And that's why, if anything, Frank had to quote unquote knight Jackie to take his throne per se, which is majority whip. I think it's a valid point. And not only is it a valid point that, you know, they initially kind of didn't like each other and then ended up in bed. And I'm not actually disagreeing with you that that wasn't her master plan. However, I'm not so sure because I think that Jackie is similar to Frank where she reacts to things. Like, when things happen, she knows, she stops and goes, okay, how do I now use this to my benefit? She's not necessarily planning one step ahead. And the reason being is there was a level or there was a moment of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of, initially, two things for me. So they're at the bar, again, talking a little bit about last episode, and she goes, oh, something about the barmaid. Oh, you know, I'm a great wingman. You know, let me get you some more FaceTime with a barmaid.
Right.
Barmaid? That's condescending. Think about it. She didn't call her a waitress. She called her a barmaid, right? Like a wench.
Mm-hmm.
That's a code word for a wench, right? So
she was $1,700 on them.
No, but really, right? Then right. After they're done with doing what they're doing, she goes, I'm actually surprised. I thought you would have gone for the waitress. See, now she's actually giving the young lady some respect and really thinking to herself, like, oh, I thought you would have gone for the waitress. She's younger, arguably prettier, so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It then allows Remy to basically be like, no, like, you're so much sexier. She works for tips. You run the Congress.
Right.
But I think that moment, she was a little bit insecure. Do you know what I mean? So when she was saying, like, oh, like, I had too much to drink, and then even the way that he goes, yeah, me too, that's why she so quickly had to kind of, like, stiffen up.
Right.
Because she didn't necessarily know that their next conversation, when they did it again, he was going to basically be like, no, like, we're not going to do this again if it, unless it leads somewhere. She's thinking like, oh, I got, you know what I mean? Right. Like, Remy's charm worked on me too. Like, the same charm he plays on a little waitress worked on me. And now I have to be the first one to say, like, whatever, I drank too much. This isn't a big deal. No preferential treatment.
Right. I think that's kind of bothering her too, because he's actually kind of like.
But do you think they she drank too much to end up in that situation? I don't think she would have. I think it was probably a little bit planned to get there. I don't think it was all alcohol.
I think that people that live certain kinds of lives and have certain kinds of demands on their career, they find it convenient just to have that buddy that they can hook up with, and they probably didn't expect it. They hung out. It led to that. That was that, and back to work. That kind of thing. There's no attachment. There's no obligations.
But they do it for a reason, just like Doug. You know, is,
well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe that's some foreshadowing because for Frank and Tusk, that they're going to end up in bed together.
Okay, that I don't know.
Not literally.
Yeah, you mean figuratively. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think also too is, and the only reason I don't think that the initial sleeping with one another was planned, because again, going back to Freddie talking to Frank about the heat, like he literally was like, you know, heat like this, like basically makes people want to sleep with one another. Like either you want to fight. Right,
or you want to
sleep with someone, and so again, I think that's what it symbolizes. I think that the pressure was getting so hot that their normal facades, her being always put together, and same thing with Remy, Remy always being put together, the heat literally melted away that facade, and for a split second, they interacted with one another. That's what I think it symbolized. I think how she reacted shows a large part of her true character in the standpoint that I think she is very pragmatic and she's a strategist, but I don't think that the initial sleeping together, and if it was more from not necessarily being majority whip. I think it was ego. Like, because she's a type A personality.
Type A personality wants
a man that she's sitting across from to flirt with another woman.
Right.
Even if it's purely out of ego. There's a little part of ego in that.
And here's the thing. You have to think about her. She has a type A personality, like you were saying. She was in the army, okay, which she had to have dealt with unimaginable sexism and BS. Just imagine what ladies go through just being in the service. And now she's in Congress. So she's pretty much dealing with, she's had to grow her own pair. And she actually sat up in bed like, yeah, I just hit that. Like, her whole swagger was like she was the guy. And then Remy gets up and he's tucking his shirt in. Is like, this is not going to happen again unless this means something. I'm like, wow, really? Really? You're going to go out like that, huh, bruh? That's how you can represent us, huh?
Because that actually is more strength and not a sign of weakness. Because at the end of the day, he was being an adult about it and saying what he wanted. And she was actually being a child because she has feelings too.
No,
She's putting on a pretend facade of being hard. Versus the difference is, as a man, he was literally saying, this is what I need from you. Because at the end of the day, I can get that from anyone. That's what I choose not to do.
Right. So he likes to flirt, but he doesn't actually sleep with people.
If you want this to go somewhere, you want to know why? Because I'm a man and I'm not a boy and I need man relationships.
Okay, I get that.
Don't be messing with Remy.
I'm not messing with Remy. I like Remy. I really do like Remy.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. Remy is a G. I like Remy a lot. But that scenario. Somebody's gonna get on me later about this. But I do.
Okay,
I really like Remy. Remy makes a lot
too.
Of money. He makes a lot of money, and he works with very powerful people. So he's getting his cake and eating it too. But the situation with her, the reason I have to have Jackie's back just a little bit is because Jackie has had to she's had to build a thick skin, and she's had to build this shell of armor for survival purposes. Otherwise, she would not be able to survive politically or career-wise in that environment. And I'm sure she had to build that just being in the service and then to go into public service as a politician. She has to, like, they just hooked up, right? They hooked up a couple times. So this is the first time that they've shown us that something is being said about what I expect out of this situation. Yeah. So as a woman, she can't be giving him the goods and then just assume that he wants more out of it. She has to sit back and be like, yeah, you know, just like you guys like to get some, then we like to get some too. And then make him express how he wants it to go.
Can I
as
say something? But I say the funny thing is, I agree with you in theory, but not based on these characters for exactly something that you said before.
Okay.
Given the fact that she's a military type A alpha, her response I actually would have preferred if it was more like Remy's. The difference is she doesn't have to pretend about anything. Alphas don't pretend. And alphas say what they want. Because what you want is not my concern. I'm going to tell you either I just want to sleep with you and I only want it to be sex. Or I'm telling you I want to sleep with you and I want to have a relationship with you.
But let's not forget she did that when they first time they slept together. The first time they slept together, she said, as soon as we walk out this room, we back to work, no special treatment. She did say what it was.
But then she was like, oh, but this it won't happen again. But then it did.
But it goes back to who they're representing. As you guys said, you know, Remy's representing Tusk. She's representing the White House and Frank at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's both of their interests and why they're doing what they're doing. And Remy is doing it because he has... Like, Tusk, even though he has billions and he's a powerful man, at the same time, he's a lot like, you know, just like everyone else as his feelings. But she's like Frank. She's cold-hearted. Mm. So she doesn't do anything without having attachments or without having a reason why she's doing something. And even though the first time may have been to the heat, it was for whatever reason, the second time was definitely planned because she... Like Frank, would not do something without knowing where it's going and what she's getting out of it.
That was a definite booty call. So that
was, it was a power control.
Well, it was a booty call, and basically, yeah.
Because Remy, at the end of the day,
he had to say what he had to say.
He has real emotions.
Say that what you said again. It was a power control.
Power control. Because at the end of the day, Remy is human. He has emotions, and he acts on them. He doesn't try to control it like Doug, like Frank, you know, like anyone else that...
Remy is actually one of the most real characters that you see who kind of lays the cards on the table. It is what it is. You either do the do or you can't do the do, and he goes about his business. He's actually one of the only characters that...
Everyone else we've
seen... He doesn't try to manipulate. He just kind of tells people what it is.
Well,
and that's actually him doing that is consistent with his character.
But everyone else we've seen hasn't allowed themselves to get emotionally tied to someone. You know, right. Doug can't be with Rachel because of whatever reason, you know, aside from the fact that he's keeping her hostage. You know, we haven't seen people have emotions and real feelings towards one another except the ones they're married to, which, you know, at the same time, you could argue, do they really? Or is it just a political strategy just to get to the top?
That's almost like a benefit, I mean, for Remy, because Remy's in a situation that he's not a politician, even though he's dealing with politics, and he has to be political and do what he has to do, but he's kind of like the messenger, so to speak, or sort of like, look, this is what it is, and you take it or leave it. This is the scenario. He, you know, even if Tusk or the person he's working for is not telling him completely what their whole agenda is, they say, look, I need you to do this right now. This is what the situation is. And he'll go, okay. So then he goes and lays the cards on the table to this person to what his knowledge is or what he's being told or whatever he's being informed of what that agenda is. He doesn't know the big, big picture of what Tusk wants. I think he knows like a piece of it. That's just my opinion about it.
No, something that you just said made me think about, I think it was two episodes ago, when Janine was talking to her class, and she said everything has to do with context. And she said that there are no random grouping of facts that is purely objective. To kind of piggyback of what you're saying about Remy, and I think that Remy holds a kind of a more powerful position sometimes, I think, than we give him credit. Because it's not... It is the messenger. But think about it.
That's why I didn't want to use that word.
No, but I see where you're going. Yeah. And it actually is a very good description. But think about it. How you then interpret information and then communicate it, it changes. Even just if it's your body language, right? Because so much of communication isn't just words. It's body language. It's subtext.
And he's always in meeting with people. You don't really see him on the phone.
Exactly.
He's meeting with people in person, face-to-face.
Well, exactly.
There's nothing tangible to have proof on.
No, true. But think about it, because even when he met with Frank, basically kind of saying to him, like, well, what are you doing with Raymond? Like, what's going on? Do you know what I mean? Like, are you pushing him into a corner? Frank basically was like, oh, you haven't talked to Raymond yet. And he was like, no, I'll only talk to him when there's something to talk to him about. So there's more going on in being the messenger, right? Because you're getting the information, you're figuring out the information, and then you're figuring out, how do I disseminate the information to the person to, in essence, benefit me.
Right.
Because technically what benefits them benefits me. But if the two aren't in alignment, I still need to benefit me.
Right.
Right? And go ahead.
And I have also noticed that every time that somebody says Remy's name and he's not around, they all take a sigh. It always like... Remy Danton. Like, okay, so they've done that every time. Claire or Frank, whenever Remy was like,
he's a loose cannon.
Dude, they don't know. It's like, who's he working for? Who? Because he represents power. He represents power. Because Remy's not being brought up unless somebody powerful is in play. If you've noticed, so every time they bring his name up, it's like a sigh. Okay, what's going on? We have to be up on what's the situation. And that, you know, that situation is what I would like to know was going to happen on Oxygen with Maria in this show, her and Kevin. This is going to be something. Oh, we have a caller. Oh, wait, hold on. Before we go into that, we have a caller. This is great. Let's see who it is. Go ahead and put him through, Steve.
Caller on the line with the House of Cards AfterBuzz TV After Show.
Hey, how you doing? Who are we talking to today? This is Thaddeus from House of Cards. Hello?
Caller?
Caller. Are you there?
Well, he's been on the line for a minute. I guess he's not talking.
Well, maybe after commercial break?
Oh, yeah. Maybe after the commercial break, he'll call back in and we can get a theory or a question.
Team right. Maria.
Team Maria.
Tuesdays on Oxygen.
I'm Maria Menounos, and my life can get a little crazy. I host Extra. I'm an actor, producer, dancer, wrestler, and a lot of other things.
I live with Kevin, my boyfriend of 15 years.
Do you really love me?
I would say that I'm in serious like.
And my parents. Yep, I just said I live with my parents.
You drive me crazy.
You drive me crazy.
My parents want us to get married.
You both love each other. Get married.
Kevin and I don't.
I am going to get married when I want to get married.
I think I want kids. Kevin definitely doesn't want them now.
This is being pushed on to us.
And of course, my parents wanted them yesterday.
This year, you got to have it.
And I have a house full of people counting on me financially.
If I take my eye off the ball, everything can fall apart.
It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks or wants us to do. It's what we want to do.
Everyone thinks that they know what's best for me, but
I'm really the only one.
I have got to figure things out.
Chasing Maria Menounos is so new. Every Tuesday at 10, 9 central, starting March 18th, only on Oxygen.
Can't wait to see that. Chasing Maria Menounos, you guys should check it out. It's really funny. Maria is a really funny individual and really, she's full of personality if you guys watch her on anything that she's on, Extra or anything else. She's very real, very authentic. And so is her boyfriend, Kevin, which you guys are good to see a little bit. And her parents are really cool, too. So it's going to be really great to watch and entertaining, I'm sure. It's really funny.
It's all that Greek flavor, you know.
Right, all that Greek flavor. And she is all those things. She dances and acts and produces and does all these number of things. So the show will not have a boring moment. I can tell you that. It'll be pretty funny. So where do we leave off just a second ago? We were talking about Tusk.
Remy.
Oh, Remy. We're talking about Remy. So Remy, he's that guy. He's that guy. So let's talk. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Remy and Remy being the representing power and representing forces to be reckoned with. Because since season one, he's lobbied for or been aligned with whoever is. Whoever. Now,
and technically he put Seth like into the Underwoods camp.
Now let's talk about the Seth Grayson guy, because Seth Grayson is a mole in essence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now it looks like as if he's trying to figure out, am I really working for the right side? Mm-hmm. This guy is he really is smart. And he's a guy after Frank's own heart. And the reason why he's a guy after Frank's own heart is because he values power more than money. And Frank has always been the guy who values power more than money. You can get money, as far as they're concerned. But power, everybody has power. Look at Tusk. Tusk has billions of dollars, but he doesn't have all the guys with the guns. So Seth might have like a little... You remember, he didn't take the pay. He didn't take the first half of payment from Remy.
Yeah.
He met up with him. He said, no, I'll take it for... You know, I don't take half a payment for a job half done. I take full payment for a job fully done. But... That is really just his way of not committing. Because once he took that money...
And also saying that you don't own me, you can't buy me.
Well, it's not only that. It's not that, because he's already agreed to do a job for them. Well, if he takes that payment, what he's doing is committing to being on that side. And he hasn't committed to being on that side.
Okay.
He's still trying to figure out if he wants to be in alignment with Frank or not on that side. Because if he does that, it's clean. It's like, you know what? I don't want to mess with you guys. I'm going to wash my hands of you guys. And he doesn't owe them any money. He hasn't taken payment. He hasn't done anything. Now now all he has to do is just say, look, I'm going to work for Frank and Claire and be on team Claire and Frank.
He's an amateur version of Frank because the way he came in and pushed Connor out of his position, you know, by going and finding information that, you know, as Frank said, they didn't even think about.
Okay, but
why amateur? I guess my question is, I completely agree with you, but why would you say amateur?
Because he hasn't been molded in the Frank way.
He's just a younger version. I don't say amateur. I would say he's just, because remember, Frank is like probably 20 years older than this guy.
I think, I understand, but I think if he starts, you know, dealing with a situation that Frank is dealing with, which is something he's probably not used to. He's not used to killing someone and knowing all that information.
sorry.
That's okay. Why I call him amateur.
Okay.
Hasn't killed anyone yet.
Go ahead, Sophia.
No,
Frank has two under his belt.
Okay. We don't know a lot about this guy's backstory.
I'm going to hope he hasn't killed anyone.
We don't know what this guy has done. Okay. If they said this guy had killed somebody in the same way that Frank had, or in certain for his interests, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he had done whatever he had done, especially the way he went into this old lady's house
and
got this information and cornered her, no respect, like she was a nice old lady, just like got her in the corner, backed her in the corner, and got the journal of her deceased husband, who was arguably respectable man in the community or whatever, proposed this one person. And you got to also think that you got a guy like Raymond Tusk, who's very powerful and influential amongst normal, regular folk, right? This guy's a billionaire. He has the president on speed dial. He's talking to the vice president on a regular basis. Then you have a guy who's one of the most powerful lobbyists in Hollywood.
it's turning into Hollywood.
It is, right? It's a lot of drama. It might as well be Hollywood. But you have a guy who's Remy Danton, who's now working for Tusk, who now he's working with. He's manipulating this whole thing. He's even got Frank sitting down trying to figure out. This is the manipulator of manipulators.
Completely.
Sitting down, respecting this man enough to say, okay, that journal got you to the table. It got you the meeting. It's like being in Hollywood and having the Ferrari. The Ferrari gets you the meeting. But that doesn't mean you're going to close the deal with the Ferrari just because you have one. That's the same kind. He has the journal. And he says, look, what is really your angle? What do you really want? And then he expressed himself, and there was a moment of truth that you cannot fake Frank out with that. He was being truthful. In that moment, he respects power over money. And really, Tusk only respects money. Money, he's a money guy. Everything that he's doing, everything Tusk is doing politically is only to benefit his pockets. That's the only reason he's doing anything politically.
But
and
aside from that, Frank is growing. He's at a different place. He's VP now versus, you know, being the majority of. He needs more soldiers. And he mentioned one thing is that he didn't see his blind spots. And if he was able to go get the journal, then, you know, the rest of the people on his team aren't doing a good job.
Well, this is also a changing of the guard for me. Because, not to cut you off. Keep going.
No. I was just going to say, you know, he needs people like him to keep watching the blind spots.
Well, he needs the new him. And the thing is that this is a changing of the guard. You have Stamper, who represented the old him, who was the majority whip. Now he's in a position of power where he can really go full throttle in what his complete agenda is of VP, and it might be just a little too much for Stamper to handle. I think that's part of the symbolism. Now you got Seth coming in, who is more of a Frank Jr. as opposed to a loyalist, who Stamper is like the dopest loyalist that anybody could have. He's not really a loyalist. He's more like Frank Jr.
I agree. And I think it's something that Emma said and then something that you said, Thaddeus, that made me also realize. It's also that you widen your network. The problem with Stamper is that, for the most part, there's no widening of his sphere of influence, right? And his sphere of influence is Frank's sphere of influence, right? With this new guy, you actually now have new connections, right? Because he comes from a completely different world. So if you say, I need X, Y, and Z, and we don't have it in our camp, he potentially could have it in his camp, number one. Number two, I think that's why it was important to show the Connor versus Seth dynamic. Because again, Connor, to me, represents more like the traditional aspect, right? And just like you said, Seth is a mini Frank. However, in this new world, and not only in this new world, I think it was a perfect analogy when you mentioned now that he's a vice president. having people or soldiers when you're the majority whip is completely different of a battle tactic than if you are the vice president of the United States, let alone that obviously Frank wants to be like the master of the universe. But do you know what I mean?
Like, he does.
Do you know what I mean? So he needs to build people like that. And I think that in a weird way, there wasn't just something about his moment of honesty. There's something that Frank likes people who are seedy.
Sinister, seedy.
And I think, I haven't figured out why, unless it's just that, you know, birds of a feather flock together. But there was something about Seth, because everything about him seems a little off.
Something is off about him. And I can't wait till we get into a further backstory about him.
Like, I remember Claire didn't like him. Claire said her gut didn't like him.
Right. And Remy, you know, where did Remy find this guy? Where did they pull this guy out of? It's really weird. And this, you know, Emma, you mentioned about how he got Connor out of the job. That was part of the whole plan.
No. I knew it was the plan. But which is what I'm saying is he had a plan. And he basically made his way into the position that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I would say more like Claire than like Frank.
Go one step further. Sure. I like where you're going.
Because
go one step further.
He didn't have to kill anyone. He didn't have to put up a fight with anyone. He did it so cleanly that Connor thought he was getting a promotion. That this was a better job for him. No, which it was.
Well, here's the thing with that, though. That was all part of Tusk's plan. Their plan was to place Seth into the White House with them
and offer
Connor the job. They mentioned that. When he met with Remy, they mentioned how they were planning on, it's like, look, we'll offer, get Connor a job, get Connor up out of there, and you'll replace him so he could be the mole and be the guy that is controlling that.
But was it the plan, or was it just the next step once he figured it out? Meaning, did they sit down and decide that? Or once he was already in, that's why he then asked Remy, hey, I need you to do this for me. And then he sold it to Remy and said,
I'd have to rewatch it. But I remember they talked about it, and they were saying that they were going to get him a job.
I think he was doing it because I think he realized he got a position in, he realized, okay, if I can get rid of Connor. So he basically, he sold it to Remy,
which
is different than I think that was the original plan with Remy.
And then Remy went to Tusk and said, look, prepare a job offer.
Yeah.
And then it was how it was carried out. Not what the plan was. It was how it was carried out, because he had to discredit Connor in some way in the work that he does.
But he actually presented that to Claire.
Yeah.
Like, they knew. Claire was in on it. It's like, look, we'll give him a lofty job offer, so it won't seem like anything that was, you know, shady that went on, and he'll be happy with it. It'll be something that, you know, and Claire was like, okay, I'm fine with that. But that's why she wanted him to be with Frank at first. So Frank
Claire
was like,
so subtly, you know, planted that seed in the, you know, Miss Walker's head of Christina and the president. She didn't have to put up a fight for it.
You're saying that there's a finesse that Claire has, which is very different than Frank, because Frank is almost very domineering.
Frank's a bully.
And technically, everyone should see it. If they don't, they're basically being stupid and they're blind.
Frank's a bully.
Claire wields more of like a fencing blade.
Exactly.
And she's very sophisticated with her movements.
Think the old lady would have handed the journal over to someone that came and threatened them?
But he did.
But he did it so, like, subtly, and the way he presented the whole, you know.
He did it with finesse.
It wasn't. If Frank would have.
He did it with finesse in the same way that Claire handed CWI over and said, I'll tell, what was the girl's name that she handed it over to? And basically
Jillian.
About killing the baby.
Basically, look, I'm willing to let your child
wither and die inside you. For the next 4 months.
See, there was a finesse to that bullying that's a lot different than Frank's. Frank is like, I hit you with the sledgehammer and knock your head off. Mm-hmm. She gets you with the samurai sword, and, you know, the guy sitting there, and then his head falls off before you realize he's cut. It's a whole different kind of. Mm-hmm. But they're doing the same thing.
No, they're both bludgeoning you. That's a great point, Emma.
Yeah, so I see that. And maybe that's where she feels uncomfortable, because it's almost like reflective of her. And she doesn't want to look at somebody else who's like her.
It was because the story was about her, and she thought she had it under control. She had, you know, the doctor was dead. There was no record. And here comes someone bringing up her dirt. Of course she's going to have issues with that.
But this is the only thing, though, and I know this sounds silly. So you have this master plan, right, which obviously the skeletons and the secrets in both of your respective closets could derail the plan, right? Because technically, if not for that, they are more than capable. Do you know what I mean? They have the intellect, they have the savvy, and they're willing to do whatever they need to do for whatever their master plan is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't you think they do a better job of shoring up these secrets? No, seriously. Like, even with this Lucas thing, like, I'm going to go back a little bit. And maybe I, again, watch way too much, like, grimy television. Get rid of Lucas in jail. Seriously. Like, have him commit suicide. That makes total sense to me.
How do we know that won't end up happening in season 3?
Well, okay, true. But to me, get, do you know what I mean, do that. Wipe out, literally go into his office, wipe everything out. And this should have been before he even got to Hammersmith, mm-hmm. right? Clean that up. What other stuff do we have? The Russo thing, pretty much taken care of. But
I think they still needed to discredit him before they got rid of him. Because if they just got rid of him and the story is out there for people to be able to talk about, then...
But that's what I mean. But I'm saying before Hammersmith. Like, I just feel like there's a certain...
They'd have to get rid of Rachel because the DUI situation came up again. They mentioned it.
Right, but do it. Like, I don't know. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, I feel like there's just a certain level of messiness where they're not taking things seriously. So even going back to Connor addressing the situation about, you know, her terminating her pregnancy, she was like, I'm not worried about it, so you shouldn't be.
Yeah, but once people...
Are you kidding me? Because the difference is just because someone's passed away, like, go at least investigate. See, because obviously someone brought it up and someone found out about it
right.
initially. Right. So go back and pretend like you're not you and you're someone trying to dig up dirt against you and make sure that all of your bases are covered. Because to me, now all it's saying to me is there's a secret we're not aware of. Probably in season 3, that is going to come bite them in the ass. Because, again, they don't waste scenes. And to me, they right. keep bringing up this secret, and they're messy. And they don't put a bow on things. They just go, oh, okay, no, we'll figure it out later.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think they do that. And I think the reason that they don't clean up everything okay. is because sometimes when you clean up everything, mm-hmm. it smears.
That's a good point. Okay.
So okay. it's okay. like, let's try to let it die down.
Okay.
If we put too much attention, I think there's a fear. The fear is putting too much attention on things to give it validation. So that's why I don't think that they actually attack everything. And that's why when Frank had to meet with Hammersmith, he was like, okay, let's invite him and have a full frontal. Because certain things you don't want to give it too much attention. Now once you're giving it too much attention and you're the VP and or whoever you are, now you're giving it validity. Now you're bringing attention, and that's going to bring media, and that's going to bring all sorts of things. When you're not concentrating on bills and things that are really most important, now people are going to start asking questions. Why are you paying so much attention to this? Is it true, or is this not? Like, if they just start offing everybody, there's going to be, it's like, wait a minute. Okay, this person's connected to this, connected to that, connected to that. That's when people really start raising eyebrows. Zoe is the only person that was really the ringleader in this investigation, and he wiped her out. Janine bounced.
You're right.
And Lucas is in jail.
No, you're excellent point.
So,
and you know, he needed to have a story, someone to pin it on, and who better than Lucas, and who's currently in jail for being the obsessive guy
and
who
it
could
does,
possibly have killed Zoe.
And
it takes the heat off of him.
And they do have it on video looking like she jumped.
Yeah.
Even though they probably can't find a motive for it, who you know, whatever. They yeah. can surmise or make up whatever story they want to right. say, oh, she had these issues. You know, they fabricate whatever they want to fabricate as far as that story is concerned. So
that's a good point. Excellent point.
Yeah, I just think that when you bring too much attention to something, you're validating it to a certain degree when you're in that position of power.
This new reporter, Isla, I think is going to be stirring up a lot of questions because she's a lot like, I feel like, Janine, but in a more... I don't know.
I actually
know
like the way she's been dealing with Seth
to use it, but she's. I feel like she's a lot like Janine, very knowledgeable, but she's willing to go to a different extent than Janine has.
Yeah, and I don't get the feeling that she slept with everybody like Janine did either.
No. I agree.
So she probably has a little more, but she has the edge at the same time.
This is the Washington Post, right?
The Wall Street Herald, Wall Street something. It's basically like the financial newspaper of Washington.
Okay,
right.
Wall Street Telegraph.
And is this higher than the Herald?
No, it's not. It's not higher. It's just that I would presume, given the fact that it's Wall Street, it's like the financial equivalent.
Right.
Okay, so they're
after Wall Street
more...
Times versus yeah. Washington Post. Right. That's what I would say.
Okay.
And she has to report on. Let's talk about that because she's investigating what's going on as far as the economics of what's behind the energy scenario with Tusk and the refinery, the bridge, the subsidies, everything that's going on as far as that's concerned. So the top of the episode, we see them having this meeting. We see the attack ad. So everything that happens, I'm like, it's Tusk. They figure it out, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. But he's always had no political ties. He's never been pro-Republican, pro-Democrat, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Now, for me, okay, this is just regular American. This guy is a billionaire. You think this guy is worth billions of dollars and he hasn't had done anything as far as trying to influence or lobby for things to go his way in Congress or in the House? Like, when Frank came to that realization, I felt like, dude, really? You're just now figuring that out? And although they had no traceable monies to him, you don't think he could use a front like a casino or any other kind of business that's not going to have any financial ties back to him? So he can make himself look clean, like he's, like, you know, not associated with anything political. He's just a businessman, hardworking American, and he's doesn't have any, like, come
but
on.
But I think what where you're going with it is because I think that Frank has a certain level or a certain level of hubris that
he didn't even realize he's been bought already by this guy
completely. for the entire time that Frank has been the majority whip. And not only, just to take it one step further, again, let's not forget about Sancor. So it's right. not as if Frank is unaware that a company could funnel or fuel multiple campaigns in order to make sure that the Democrats are a majority.
Right.
And again, the reason that Remy switched sides is because Tusk has more money than Sancor.
Right.
So I completely agree with you. However, even with that said, it was nice to see that moment where Frank was like, oh, crap.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And he was like, wait. And then he looked at us and he was like, wait, should I tell the president? No. Because then the president will wonder, like, why didn't I know?
Right.
Like, that makes me, like, and so I think that everything that you said, Frank had that moment where he was speaking on our behalf.
Yeah.
Like, oh, crap, I should have known. Yeah. How did I not know this? Yeah. How did I not see this coming? But I felt that was refreshing.
Exactly your point. I don't think he was surprised that Tusk was doing it. I think he was surprised that he didn't find out sooner.
Right.
I don't think he was surprised at the fact that Tusk was doing this
right.
and was capable of doing it.
Right.
He was just surprised, like, how did I not find this out sooner so I could have done something with it?
Right. I mean, he's that coming to that realization that this guy has stacked Congress. Like, oh my goodness. Like, he's putting the pieces together. You know, being the hubris is huge. And that's one strength that, or one weakness, I would call it a weakness of Frank's. One, just like he thought he was going to get Secretary of State. And just like she said, you should have seen this coming. She doesn't really, she kind of just plays the game as she sees the you know, the things, objects flying at her. Once you start thinking, oh, I'm the man or I'm the woman, then you kind of stand there when you see the thing coming, like you can just go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it hits you upside the head. And you have to realize, oh my gosh, I saw the thing coming, but I didn't move out of the way. Claire doesn't really operate that way. I think she kind of helps keep Frank grounded in that respect. But Frank, what? Were you going
to
say something?
Well, I mean, it's completely because it goes back to last episode when he's throwing the ball with Meacham and she brings up
exactly.
the last time. Like, that was a little jab.
Right.
She keeps him grounded. She was like, oh, I hope it's not like last time.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, dude, I'm like preparing to throw out a pitch the first time as vice president and you want to bring up the time where I, like, the ball went up in the air and hit me on the head? That was her little, like, yo.
And Meacham says, comic relief picture.
Right?
That was
but
really
again,
funny.
She's keeping him grounded, like, don't embarrass us.
All right. Don't go out there and be another clip on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that would go
but
viral.
But even when he broke the...
he goes, don't Claire. The pot.
Right. He goes, don't tell Claire. She's like, I heard that.
Right.
So there's nothing that he does she doesn't know about.
Well, they're like the same person. They know, but she's like...
But that's not what I meant.
I meant,
you know, as in... She sees everything, even though he might not tell her, or she could sense. And they could speak,
without
you know, in a
talking.
Silence with mm-hmm. their eyes without really talking.
Right. And perfect point, because I think, and again, if we don't want to talk about this in detail, we can talk about it online. There's a certain aspect where it keeps being brought up that they are a marriage of convenience or a political marriage. And I think that that in of itself is somewhat condescending. And I think I said this season one. Mm-hmm. I think we should be very careful of assigning judgment on other people's relationship when everyone's together for some self-interest. Whether or not it's like little good googly little feelings that you have and the little butterflies that you have, right. Whether or not it's that you want to spend the rest of your life with someone, and in so doing, your version of that is raising a family, right? There's still a goal. Their goal is just a different goal. And I think that, just like you said, there's a level of intimacy that they have because sometimes they don't even need to speak.
Right.
That they are so connected and so, and I want to say one, but I'm actually not, because Claire, even in her interview, says we're two individual people who chose to be in alignment with the same goal. And ironically, that's so much more powerful.
It is more powerful.
Because again, instead of halves, you have two whole individual people, so that if in fact, you know, Frank does kind of slip, she can catch him.
Right.
Why? Because she's strong. If she was only half, she would literally topple over with him.
Right.
That is never an option. You want to know why? Because it's always in alignment with the plan.
Well, what's funny go ahead, Emma.
And I was going to say that, you know, as she tells the president's wife, that the key to their marriage is that they're always honest with one another and they don't sweep anything under the rug.
Right.
Which you could tell when they're sitting at the table, both of them realize they're having issues. They looked at one another and like, okay, this is our time to jump in, separate them.
No, but even before that, can I say something? Before that, though, they kind of brag. So before, when they realize that they're having problems, that like, oh, we run together, oh, I can barely keep up, that was bragging. That was really to, like, hammer home to them that they're not connected, right? That here they are in this lovely home, right, in probably, I'd assume, it's probably Georgetown, if you're familiar with D.C., a very, very, you know, sophisticated, wealthy neighborhood, right? And here they basically are having the president and the first lady over to dinner, and they serve them barbecue. There's a subtlety to that, right? Because it means I'm so comfortable in who we are that we don't have to put on a pretense,
right?
But we're going to still serve it on fine china because we're still
serving the president and the first lady.
But at the end of the day, we're normal human beings, right? So that's what they were trying to show them. And then we're gonna banter in a way that loving couples do. Because didn't you notice, like, they seem like one of those couples where you're like, oh my God, what a cute couple. Like, they're kind of joking and making jokes and they run together and she's like, oh, but I can't even keep up. And then the first lady is like, oh, that's great. I wish we had more things to do with one another. And then she's mentioned spinning. And then she's going to embarrass her husband, which is very different than what Claire did. Because Claire showed deference to her husband by basically saying, I can barely keep up with him.
Right.
Which is very different than the first lady, in essence, trying to throw a jab at her husband in front of other people.
Right. And that was actually an extension of the conversation that they were having in the limo before they showed up, because she wanted him to remove Christina because she feels uncomfortable. And also, she's already inferred that something might be going on. Not that Garrett is doing something, but Christina may be attracted to the president. And then later she says, well, me and Frank don't sweep anything under the rug. We discuss everything. And that's playing upon what she's already inferred, that if there's something going on, then that means everything's not being discussed and everything's not on the table. But going back to what you were saying about how much more powerful it is for them to be in alignment with a goal that has nothing to do with sexuality. If you think about most relationships are based on a level of sexuality. It's natural. It's the way relationships are. People are attracted to this person because of who that person is, and they're attracted to that person sexually as well. Now, what they have done on this show has removed any threat of sexuality to this relationship, which actually empowers Frank and Claire to a whole exponential degree. She's already hooked up with Adam. Any other husband would have been pissed, probably had this dude wiped off the face of the earth, especially being who he is already, have him taken care of. There was some pretense or insinuation of some past sexual relationship when Frank had the library dedicated to him at his old alma mater, and he hung out with his old buddy. There was some inference of some sexual experimentation or something, even though they didn't show them doing anything. You can tell that the basis of their relationship is not based on sexuality. Imagine if the average person came home and saw their significant other hooking up with somebody or cheating, if she knew that he was hooking up with Zoe. It was all in alignment with what they were needed to do based on whatever was going on, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So now there's, so that takes away any threat of anybody being able to sexually challenge their relationship. Look at Hillary and Bill. Still together.
It's a brilliant
They're point. Powerful. Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, powerful. He came in, oh yeah, there was, here's the dress with the semen on it. Hillary's not tripping about that. That's what makes them that much more like powerful. It just takes away any threat of sexuality being jeopardizing their union. So now that you have that taken away, you have to really look at how formidable these two individuals are, because that really makes their end goal that much more unstoppable. But it's actually a chink in the armor of the president and the first lady, because she's threatened by the fact that Christina may be possibly be sexually attracted to the president.
No,
so their sexuality is actually still part, a very great part of that relationship.
Going back to you mentioning the library and how it was dedicated in Frank's name, did you guys take Frank's spirit and his free, how, you know, he was just so free and they were drinking, walking down the hallway, a little bit compared to how he was with his friend back in the day? You know, when
totally, because I think also too, like, he was young.
Yeah.
It was young. It's like before he was burdened with life, like they was literally regressing.
Right.
That's why they were drinking and running around like they did, and that's why even like Claire.
With the president. When they were walking down the hallway drinking, and then they're standing in front of the painting and they're trying to, you know, they're playing this game and they're talking about the, you know, joking.
Oh,
I just felt like for one split second
I disagree. That's so funny.
He went back to that old person he was, a split second.
Not for me. Okay. I think he was really, and he was like reveling. He's like, see, I'm that much closer. Like, it's different being, like, you know, the White House, literally you have basically like the professional wing, like the office wing, and then you have the residential wing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The way they seemed to set it up, it seemed like they were in the residential sector. So I think that Frank was literally like, I'm one step closer. Like Garrett is bringing me in. Like, it's one thing for us to be like, you know, president and vice president, but in that moment it was more like Garrett was reaching out like, I need a buddy, right? Like, I need a buddy, I can't talk to anyone. And he was really kind of like,
I need somebody who understands, who can truly empathize but knows the situation and knows what I'm going through or whatever. It's, but mentioning that, playing off of that, that was even after, because now they're already leaking. They're leaking blood from the neck already. Mm-hmm. For me, when they invited them to dinner, I said, this is so unfair. They are straight going for the jugular. Yeah. I said, they're going for the jugular on this. And that's how I took it. I didn't look at, they're getting close to the
first. Not at that point.
I was like, they're going for the jugular now. Mm-hmm. It's like, and they sprung a leak.
Completely.
With that whole dinner, having barbecue
and
at the house.
And how symbolic
was... And then he was getting them liquored up. You know, taking a drink.
Mrs. Walker was like, okay.
How symbolic was the battlefield? And having Walker, President Walker, and Frank Underwood...
Facing one another
on opposite sides.
Right.
It was...
Also, I'm
going to
take it one step further. Also, that the president was unaware of what was going on. He had to ask. He was like, what battle was this?
Right.
Who won? Which side is this?
Right.
So again, it's literally that, like, this isn't even a formidable opponent.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And then again, Frank's like, oh, well, here, have some more. And he basically says to him, like, oh, so, like, if you continue to let the stress of this office get you down and you can't enjoy, like, what does he say, the subtle luxuries or the basically the moments where you can kind of not be the president. And what does the president do? The president goes, no, Frank, stop, basically call me Garrett. And Frank says, oh, I have too much respect for the office. And Garrett, again, basically says, no, in this situation, call me Garrett.
Right.
It was like, checkmate, slap. Like, I was like, no! Like, are you kidding me? I was just like, and again, why? And now I realize why Frank was like, oh, I'm not moving to the National Observatory. Frank was like, this is my home court advantage.
Right.
This is my battlefield. This is my battleground. I am comfortable here. Like, I can literally move and maneuver everything exactly how I want it. And that's what he did. Because
and if you also think about Frank, and we're going to talk about, we got to talk about a couple other things because we're running slow on time.
Okay.
But if you think about what he mentioned, like you said, they don't waste scenes. They don't waste lines.
Mm-hmm.
He said this battlefield, there was no clear winner in this battlefield.
Ooh.
And Frank doesn't really... Frank, if you notice how Frank, just like what happened with his grandfather on the... You know, it was like he almost had to redeem the family name. Mm-hmm. So it was like, there's going to be a clear winner with this situation. There was something about that
symmetry,
that particular battle. Well, there was no clear winner, but there was a lot of lives lost. So think about all the casualties in this war that Frank is both sides. But in his, as far as Frank is concerned, I'm going to redeem a situation. There's going to be a clear winner in this situation. I'm going to redeem this battle.
And that was after Lanigan left the house. When he went and broke the table, he goes up to Claire. Claire walks in on him and says, "What's going on? Are you okay?" He said, "It's not broken. I can fix it."
Yeah, that's true.
So
he just threw it on the ground. Now, that was a great scene. That was a great scene as well. And the reason why is because Frank has not ever been able to manipulate or present something that somebody wants. This guy Lanigan basically tells him, you know, your nothing is light years ahead of where I started, and I'll let you know when I give a F about, you know, your respect. I mean, think about somebody coming to your house. You're the vice president of the United States. This guy, you know, Frank thinks he's the man. This guy's like, I started from the bottom. Your nothing is not really nothing.
I think he's obviously from a reservation, so the hate or the what they feel towards the government is not the same as what they feel towards a private citizen being Tusk. So to know how he, you know, went about doing that. He says, "I know exactly how you feel," or he said something of that line. It's like, no, you don't. You don't know where he comes from or what he's been through.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't compare yourself. So that was very poor on Frank's part, which is why he was pissed off the way he went about how he had the meeting.
He was being a politician. He was speaking to Lanigan.
But he was being a bad politician.
He didn't
know his history.
Even before that, he didn't even need to know his history. And this is, I think, why it's very important, and this scene was great. Because from the beginning, basically, he literally says to the Secret Service, like, the knives are in the kitchen, and you have a pistol. Like, stop looking at me like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why that had to be the opening scene, mm-hmm. right? Now, he very clearly tells Frank what he wants, right? Because if we're at a negotiating table, right, you tell me what you want, I tell you what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Frank basically dismissed that and basically said, "No, child, I'm going to tell you what you need." Right. Think about it. Even the posturing. Mm-hmm. Lanigan is sitting down. Frank is standing up. Lanigan very clearly said, "Do you know why I like money? I can stack it. I can smell it. I can measure it.
He explained
himself right. and told him. And then said, "There is no basically there is no amount of money that you can give me that Tusk can't. So either you give me more money than Tusk does, and right. we have a deal, right. or I leave." That is when Frank goes, "Well, I understand because I come from where." Excuse me? I don't need you to understand. And that's why he said, like, "I don't give a. I'll tell you when I need your respect." That's not what I needed. I'm right. telling you, man to man, adult person to adult person, what I need. And you think that as an authoritative posture, as the vice president of the United States of America, that you are going to tell me what I need? It was condescending and it was disrespectful.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he had him come through the back door.
I mean,
he should have known better.
Do you know what I mean? And even
he said,
that,
everybody comes through the back door.
And I'm like, oh my goodness. But then even that was symbolic. Right. Because mm-hmm. again, it shows that literally Frank respects no one. Because obviously, who comes through the front door?
Claire. Him and Claire.
Right.
And you would have thought that he would have learned from his mistake, you know, or not even mistake, but the way he handled... I keep on forgetting his name. When they were stuck in the office together.
Blythe. Donald Blythe.
How he said, you know, I should have went after...
His heart,
which he didn't with Lanigan right now. He treated him just like everyone else.
Right.
So he needs to study his opponents a little bit better and know what they want exactly.
Or just listen to them.
Just pay attention.
Wait,
didn't they? There was a scene where they said... They were speaking, I think it was Remy speaking to Jackie, and they were talking about how Frank's not a good listener.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, that was before they, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They even mentioned it.
And they both laughed about
Frank
it.
Frank is so, like,
into
focused
himself.
On what his agenda is and imposing what he wants on others that sometimes listening gets you, just like with Donald Blythe, who was stuck in the room, and he sits there and he's listening to him about his wife, and he's like, "Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I didn't think about this before." There's sometimes Frank, you know, it's the hubris, like you said, Sophia.
That's why I think Jackie's going to be great, because she listens, but then she still does what she wants and uses the information she got to turn against
women are such good listeners.
Oh my god, I could like throw the pen.
We'll kill him after. Off camera, no evidence.
The women are being empowered. You got Jackie who's coming up. You got Claire who's already powerful. Who else is there? I think Rachel is becoming empowered in her scenario with Stamper. And Isla the reporter as well. So, yeah, the ladies are coming up.
Well, Linda, I feel like she's holding back, but Linda's going to be coming with a strike. You know, not a strike, what am I talking about? A swing. She's, like, not talking a lot, but she's taking all the information in. I don't know what she's going to do, but she's definitely going to do something.
You know, Frank is still after everybody who didn't get him that. Even though he's a better position with a VP, he's still after everybody who didn't give him his Secretary of State nod. He's not one of those guys like, oh, well, it worked out for the better.
And
he's still like,
Can we talk about Tuscan and Claire for a second and his demeanor and his posture, the way he was exiting the room? He just became like a little puppy in front of Claire. And
well, he's old school. The guys don't talk business in front of the wives.
He admired her in a different way. It wasn't just because he was being polite and respectful. Oh. He looked at her in a different way.
I actually disagree. I disagree with you. There's a part of me that I agree with you, but notice what he said, right? He said, my wife really respects what you're doing, right? And she goes, thank you. How about you? Meaning, we're having a conversation. So again, relegating your opinion of me only to just kind of, you know, what you're saying, it's almost like, yeah, women only talk about women things and men talk about men things. And then he very strategically chose his words.
He sure did.
He goes, I'm in support of anything that diminishes violence or
that avoids violence.
Right? So again, he's not saying that he supports her, right? Mm-hmm. That's a little bit condescending, which especially given the fact that he does respect his wife, and him and his wife do talk business.
Right.
Jim kind of say she's just not some silly woman. Again, because again, going back to the analogy, Frank and Tusk are the same person.
Right.
There is no way that they could technically have women. Yes, they may have women who appear to be trophies, if you know what
the face,
but mm-hmm. they are equals in every sense of the word.
And they have shown Tusk speaking with his wife the same way that Frank speaks with Claire.
Even with the vice president, he talked to his wife.
Exactly.
That ending, I think, was meant for Frank.
He was
saying it not because he wasn't respecting Claire and what she was doing. He was
sending a message to Frank.
He
said, I'm in favor of anything that helps avoid a violence or something like that. Like, basically, if we don't have to get our hands dirty, let's do it that way. But that was.
Yeah.
And it was double meaning because basically Claire's work is based on redoing the whole military.
Mm-hmm. On sexual assault.
We also forgot to mention that Jackie puts it on hold. So,
we'll deal with that next episode, because she's a tricky one, Sharp.
Her last name isn't Sharp for no reason. Okay, well, we covered a lot of stuff. You guys can go ahead and go on YouTube and Twitter and make comments, and iTunes as well. You guys comment, rate, give us five stars. Tell a friend and have a friend follow us if they're a fan of the show, watch us, and you guys can like chime in next time if you guys want to. Where can we find you guys until next episode?
You can find me on Twitter at Sophia Stanley.
You guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, RealMK, and also GQJedi.com.
And you can find me on GQJedi.com and Twitter and Instagram at Club Thaddeus. Until next time, After Buzzers.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.